Chapter 43. Help the smoker left on the sinking ship. Smokers are panicking nowadays. They sense that there's a change in society. Smoking is now regarded as an unsociable habit, even by smokers themselves. They also sense that the whole thing is coming to an end. Millions of smokers are now stopping, and all smokers are conscious of this fact. Every time a smoker leaves the sinking ship, the ones left on it feel more miserable. Every smoker instinctively knows that it is ridiculous to pay good money for dried leaves rolled up in paper, to set light to them, and to breathe cancer-triggering tar into his lungs. If you still don't think it silly, try sticking a burning cigarette in your ear and ask yourself, what's the difference? Just one. You can't get the nicotine that way. If you can stop sticking cigarettes in your mouth, you won't need the nicotine. Smokers can't find a rational reason for smoking, but if someone else is doing it, they don't feel quite so silly. Smokers blatantly lie about their habit, not only to others, but to themselves. They have to. The brainwashing is essential if they're to retain some self-respect. They feel the need to justify their habit, not only to themselves, but to non-smokers. They are, therefore, forever advertising the illusory advantages of smoking. If a smoker stops on the willpower method, he still feels deprived and tends to become a moaner. All this does is to confirm to other smokers how right they are to keep smoking. If the ex-smoker succeeds in kicking the habit, he's grateful that he no longer has to go through life choking himself or wasting money. But he has no need to justify himself. He doesn't sit there saying how marvellous it is not to be smoking. He'll do that only if he's asked, and smokers won't ask that question. They wouldn't like the answer. Remember, it is fear that keeps them smoking, and they would rather keep their heads in the sand. The only time they ask that question is when it's time to stop. Help the smoker. Remove these fears. Tell him how wonderful it is not to have to go through life choking yourself, how lovely it is to wake up in the morning feeling fit and healthy instead of wheezing and coughing, how wonderful it is to be free of slavery, to be able to enjoy the whole life, to be rid of those awful black shadows. Or better still, get him to listen to this book. It's essential not to belittle the smoker by indicating that he's polluting the atmosphere or is in some way unclean. There is a common conception that the ex-smoker is the worst in this respect. I believe this conception has some substance, and I think this is due to the willpower method of stopping. Although the ex-smoker has kicked the habit, he retains some of the brainwashing, and part of him, therefore, still believes that he's made a sacrifice. He feels vulnerable, and his natural defense mechanism is to attack the smoker. This may help the ex-smoker, but it does nothing to help the smoker. All it does is to make him feel even more wretched and consequently make his need for a cigarette even greater. Although the change in society's attitude to smoking is the main reason why millions of smokers are quitting, it doesn't make it easier for them to do so. In fact, it makes it a great deal harder. Most smokers nowadays believe they're stopping mainly for health reasons. This is not strictly true. Although the enormous health risk is obviously the chief reason for quitting, smokers have been killing themselves for years, and it has made not the slightest difference. The main reason why smokers are stopping is because society is beginning to see smoking for what it actually is: filthy drug addiction. The enjoyment was always an illusion. This attitude removes this illusion so that the smoker is left with nothing. The complete ban on smoking in many subway systems is a classic example of the smoker's dilemma. The smoker either takes the attitude, OK, if I can't smoke on the train, I'll find another means of travel, which does no good. Or he says, fine, it'll help me cut down on my smoking. The result of this is that instead of smoking one or two cigarettes on the train, neither of which he would have enjoyed, he abstains for an hour. During this enforced period of abstinence, however, not only will he be mentally deprived and waiting for his reward, but his body will also have been craving nicotine. And oh, how precious that cigarette will be when he's eventually allowed to light up. Enforced abstinence doesn't actually cut down the intake, because the smoker just indulges in more cigarettes when he's eventually allowed to smoke. All it does is ingrain in the smoker's mind how precious cigarettes are and how dependent he is upon them. I think the most insidious aspect of this enforced abstinence is its effect on pregnant women. We allow teenaged girls to be bombarded with massive advertising that gets them hooked in the first place. Then, during pregnancy, one of the most stressful periods in women's lives, when in their deluded minds they need cigarettes most of all, the medical profession blackmails them into giving up because of the harm they're causing the baby. Many are unable to do so, and are forced, through no fault of their own, to suffer a guilt complex for the rest of their lives. Many of them succeed, and are pleased to do so, thinking, fine, I'll do this for the baby, and after 9 months I'll be cured anyway. Then comes the pain and fear of labour, followed by the biggest high of their lives. The pain and fear are over, and the beautiful new baby has arrived. And the old trigger mechanism comes into operation. Part of the brainwashing is still there, and almost before the cord has been cut, the woman has a cigarette in her mouth. The elation of the birth blocks the foul taste from her mind. She has no intention of becoming hooked again. Just the one cigarette. Too late. She is already hooked. Nicotine has gotten into her body again. The old craving will start, and even if she doesn't become hooked right away, postnatal depression will probably get her smoking again. It's strange that although heroin addicts are criminals, according to law, our society's attitude is, what can we do to help the pathetic individuals? Well, let us adopt the same attitude to the poor smoker. He's not smoking because he wants to, but because he thinks he has to, and unlike the heroin addict, he usually has to suffer years and years of mental and physical torture. We always say a quick death is better than a slow one, so don't envy the poor smoker. He deserves your pity.